broadband internet service providers in Real Simple Syndication are proud to bring you
Carlin and Jordan's Most Excellent Movie Night.
Well, thank you very much for joining us for Carlin and Jordan's Most Excellent Movie Night.
Woo!
That's Carlin.
And that's Jordan.
And we are here to talk about movies.
Because we love them.
And we hate them.
And we hate them.
All at the same time.
Yeah, we love some, we hate others, and we love and hate sometimes the same film.
Yeah, it's interesting how you can have that dynamic of, oh yeah, this part of the film is awesome. And then it's like, that actor, he is horrible. He must die.
Yeah. Or, the first 45 minutes of this movie was really good, and then it became crap. Like, the first Transformers film for me.
Yeah.
First 45 minutes, I was very much enjoying myself, and then all of a sudden it was just like, someone told the writer, this needs to be done in like a week, and they're like, oh no, scribble.
Let's just get some monkeys in a room and see what they come up with.
Pretty much.
And you say, monkeys, robots, go.
Yeah.
So anyway, this is our very first episode. One thing that we wanted to mention before we go into the actual film that we're going to discuss this time is that all of our movies that we choose, we watch streaming on Netflix. They might not be available when the episode's posts because that's the nature of the beast.
Yep.
And Netflix gets movies, they lose them.
Yep, what are you going to do?
What are you going to do? So we're just going to go ahead and keep on going and just enjoy the process as it happens.
Indeed.
So Carlin, you actually chose the very first movie that we sat down and watched.
Yes, I feel honored because I chose the very first one. It was kind of one, actually I started, what happened is I started watching it because it's something I'd wanted to see. It popped up on Netflix Instant and I started watching it and probably maybe only like 15 minutes into it I texted Jordan and was just like, this should be the first movie we do. He went and saw it, and he agreed.
Yeah,
so,
it was a fantastic movie, so we're more than glad to start off the podcast with something we both enjoyed.
A film we like to call Antiviral.
Antiviral.
Directed by Brandon Cronenberg.
Yes, so he liked to call it that, too.
Yes, he certainly did.
And it only came out last year, 2012, so that's
fairly new.
That's pretty new. It's got some interesting people actually acting in the movie.
Caleb Landry Jones.
Yeah, Caleb Landry Jones. He was the main character, Sid. He's been in a couple of different things, like No Country for Old Men, The Social Network, which was a really good movie.
Yes.
And also X-Men First Class, which, if you don't mind, you're X-Men.
And he was Banshee for anyone out
yes.
there who wants to put
yes.
a face with that character.
Yeah, the skinny redheaded kid.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing to me is, anything else I've seen Caleb Landry Jones in, he's not been a main character, like a main character. He's been a character, and like with Banshee and X-Men, he was kind of, you know, he was an important character, but you didn't get to see enough of him acting to really form an opinion on how he acts.
And I think that probably is going to be most of his career, is that in like the bigger budget stuff, you know, where you make your bread and butter, he's
yep.
probably going to be a side character and everything like that.
Yep.
But I think he's going to do a lot of indie roles like this movie was, and I think he's probably going to make his name kind of like Tilda Swinton did as
okay.
a indie actress who is known for doing big movies sometimes.
Right.
So,
well, you know, I was thinking about Caleb Landry Jones in this, and first of all, I will say I thoroughly enjoyed his acting in it. I think he did an outstanding job. He brought the realism for the character of Sid March
yeah.
in this film. I don't talk about this later, but kind of bring it in now. But I wonder a little bit if he doesn't get as big of roles because he is a redhead.
I think that might be part of it, and I also think it might be part of his complexion. He has
yes.
the standard redhead complexion.
Yes. He's pretty pasty,
very,
white.
Very, very pale.
And I question if, for the Antiviral film, if that may have helped for him being cast.
I have some notes on that, so we're
going
to talk about that when we get into the mise-en-scène and everything like that. Fantastic. Another person who was in the movie was the actress Sarah Gadon, and she was playing the character Hannah Geist, a character that you didn't really get to interact with more so much, but she was playing somebody who all the other characters were looking towards.
Yes.
And she's been in some interesting things as well. Most of her work has been done in Canada. She's done a Canadian police drama called Flashpoint. She's also been in some of David Cronenberg's films.
Oh.
She was in Cosmopolis, I think is how you pronounce it.
Okay.
It's not someone I have seen yet, but I'm definitely interested in seeing her work in that. She was also in the World Without End miniseries that was out not too terribly long ago.
Oh, and with the comment about David Cronenberg working with her, it is important to note that Brandon Cronenberg, yes, is David Cronenberg's son.
Yes. So nepotism, it's how you get into movies.
But I will say, he has proved himself with
film. No, absolutely. He did a great job with this film, and I definitely look forward to seeing what he has coming out in the future.
You can sign me up for anything else he puts out.
Absolutely. And then there was Douglas Smith as Edward Porras, and he's been in a bunch of different things. The X-Files, a couple of episodes of that. Also CSI Miami and Big Love. So he's done some
good
interesting
films.
Shows. And then Malcolm McDowell.
Love Malcolm McDowell. We're recording in my basement, and I actually have a glossy of Malcolm McDowell from A Clockwork Orange, and it is signed by him. I met him at a horror convention, Horrifying Weekend, in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania.
So I think it is a good summary to say that you might be a fan.
I love Malcolm McDowell.
Yeah.
I love his acting ability. And the interesting thing about him for me is it seems like he's gotten even more work as he's gotten older.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, because for a long time, all he was known for was A Clockwork Orange.
Correct.
But in the more recent years, you know, the first thing that I saw him in that I could remember seeing him in and being conscious of him as an actor was Heroes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which it started off as a great TV show and then ended on a less than spectacular note. So, you know, that the fact that he's willing to take work anywhere. He's done indie Canadian films, he does TV, big motion pictures. He was in a Star Trek movie as well. I think it was Generations, excuse me. And of course Clockwork Orange, which is probably the role he's most well known for.
Well, it's interesting because I had met him last year at that convention in 2012, I guess when Antiviral ended up coming out. But Antiviral came out after I met him, and I was just kind of chatting with him as he was, you know, signing my glossy, and I was asking him what he had worked on lately that he liked, and he said Antiviral.
Oh, so that's how you heard of the movie?
Well, I had heard of it then, and I was kind of like, I'm going to have to put this on a list to check out, but then also I subscribed to a horror entertainment and culture magazine called Rue Morgue that's done out of Canada, and it's phenomenal for anyone who likes horror stuff, and they had Antiviral as their cover story for 1 month, and it was a favorable review in there, so I was like, oh yeah, that's right, Malcolm McDowell said he worked on this, I want to check this out, so...
So we've been talking a lot about Antiviral itself. Just to share a little bit about its pedigree, it's been shown at several films festivals. It was at Cannes. It was also at the Toronto International Film Festival. And if you know anything about film festival circuits, Toronto is one of the big places to be.
Yep.
So is Chicago. So we'll be talking about different conventions and festivals and things like that. And hopefully, if we get lucky, we'll be able to do like something from a local Baltimore film festival where we talk about movies that we see there or something like that.
That would be awesome. Who knows where this will take us?
Yeah, absolutely. Some of the awards that it won for the Toronto International Film Festival, it actually tied winning Toronto's Best Canadian First Feature Film Award.
Wow.
So it's done pretty well, and we're not the only people singing the praises of Antiviral.
Yes.
So that's something pretty cool. So let's go ahead, since this is about movies we've seen on Netflix, one thing that we wanted to do to kind of act as a teaser, if you haven't seen the movie yet, but shame on you if you haven't, because...
They're spoilers, so...
These are very spoiler-filled episodes. We don't want to limit ourselves in what we talk about. So we're going to definitely say, from this point on, if you haven't listened, pause it right here. And you're back. Thanks very much for watching the movie. We'll go ahead and continue on from this point. So the Netflix summary is, this wild sci-fi vision imagines a freaky future where diseases caught by celebrities are put on the market for injection by their obsessed fans.
One of the great things about this is it's not just one genre either. It's a mixture of horror, sci-fi, and thriller, I believe.
Oh yeah, there's a definite thriller aspect to this, especially like with Sid trying to get away from the people who are chasing him throughout the movie.
Right.
You know, because now that he has this, let's talk a little bit about the actual story. I feel like we're jumping ahead of ourselves. So Sid, tell us who Sid is.
Sid March, played by Caleb Landry-Jones, as we said before, is an employee at Lucas.
Mm-hmm.
What's it called, Lucas?
I have that here in my notes.
Incorporate? It's not like Lucas Incorporated or anything like that. It's Lucas something.
It is...
I think it's the Lucas Company.
I think actually. It is like the Lucas Company. Or...
So, at any rate, he works for this company, and this company is involved in manufacturing diseases from celebrities.
Yes. Basically, what happens is their representatives go to the posh ritzy hotel that the celebrities check into. They extract a sample from the individual, and then they go ahead and generate a version of the virus that will only infect the person who is purchasing the virus or the infection.
So it's interesting because these companies have contracts with certain celebrities to, you know, anytime they get sick, they have one of their representatives contact the company, and then they send someone out to come and collect their new disease. And it ranges in diseases from really bad stuff to, you know, things just like, you know, herpes of the mouth.
Yeah, and I would expect that, you know, for that type of thing, they didn't really get into the pricing structure at all, but I would expect, you know, like...
Expensive.
Yeah, like, just, you know...
Standard. Herpes are expensive this day and age.
I guess so, but, I mean, you know, a little... blistering around the corner of your mouth probably would cost less than a full-on STD.
Yeah.
You know.
Which I believe the Lucas Company does have available.
Yes, they do. And also, what was interesting to find out was not only are the people collecting viruses, or not only are the common people doing this, but also like the owners of the company collect very strong lethal viruses as personal trophies.
Correct.
Which was an interesting thing. And it was called the Lucas Clinic.
Lucas Clinic. Where, got it. Yes.
Where Sid worked.
So it's important to note that the character of Sid March, he works for the Lucas Clinic, but he also has his own little job on the side.
Yes, he does. He works... Do you want to call him a butcher?
Entrepreneur?
Entrepreneur. There's a very strong market in this. I'm not going to call it a future society. I'm going to call it an alternate society because it doesn't have enough futuristic technology to really be way out there future-wise. But there's a process where they grow... They clone muscle tissue from celebrities, and then they sell it as food products.
Right, and this is actually separate from what like the Lucas Clinic does.
Right.
They're kind of like local butcher shops that create this. I don't think it's celebrity flavored necessarily, but it has their cells in it.
Yeah,
that they grow. So. At one point, Sid March says, basically, how is this not cannibalism?
Yeah.
And it's like, well...
Yeah, and the guy comes down on, that's actually a religious issue more than anything like that. In fact, why don't we go ahead and listen to that clip here, just so people can have a little bit of an idea of what the movie is about.
I don't understand how this isn't considered cannibalism.
Well, these are just muscle cells. It all depends on whether the human being is found in its materials.
Right now, the law tends towards something more religious. See what happens when we go from growing celebrity cell steaks to growing complete celebrity bodies. I'm looking forward to it. Now, with the proper funding, I could probably make that happen.
So there you go. There's some interesting stuff that really works into all that with the growing and everything like that. Just a quick pointer, if you want to see images from the movie, some stills that we've taken and everything like that, go ahead and visit our website, and you'll be more than able to see images from the movie so you can get an idea of where everything is going.
Yeah.
But how did you feel about that concept of, like, you know...
Of the celebrity meat steaks? Very odd. Obviously, which I'm sure is a reaction of many viewers to this film, which is, that's nothing I would ever participate in. It's very kind of like a disgusting thing. But one of the first things that really occurred to me is when they show the meat, it's very, like,
it's
tasty,
it's nasty
colored.
Looking.
It looks like gross pork. Like pork that's been left out too long, so it's kind of graying a little bit.
Yeah, I would not eat that no matter what.
No,
I mean,
no. And they keep it in, like sitting liquid, kind of. It's just, ugh. It's gross.
Well, it kind of is an interesting idea because it, to me, is the basest form of consumerism that you could have.
And I think that's the point of this film, is that, you know, the ridiculous consuming of anything celebrity-related, from their diseases, like, oh, I love this celebrity so much, I have to have their most recent disease in me. Because these people are living vicariously through them, in a sense. So, you know, when the celebrity goes and gets herpes, I'm just going to keep referring to herpes, when they go and get herpes, this you know, fan is like, oh my gosh, I want to have that experience that they had, in a sense.
Yeah, and the incredible thing that they do is, when part of Sid's job is that he's sitting in the Lucas Clinic talking to individuals who want to have the disease injected into their body. So he's sitting there selling them, here's your herpes, or here's your chlamydia, whichever one you want, or here's your common cold, whatever your budget can afford. But this is the disease that I think you'll like the most.
He's a salesman.
He's a salesman, yeah.
He is.
And the greatest part of it, the sales pitch, is when he has the first patient that we see him with sitting in the chair, and he goes, well, would you like it on your left side of your face or the right side of your face? And the guy basically asks, well, what's the difference? And Sid says, well, she had it on, I think it was on her right side.
Yeah.
So if she kissed you, then it would be on your left side.
Yes.
And
so that's that extra little bit of salesmanship.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, oh, you could really sell it to someone that you actually kissed Anna Geist.
Yeah, and this dude, this client just got so excited.
Yeah.
It was crazy to see how excited he got. You know, and another thing that, you know, brought this close to home was the idea of how much the people are obsessed by the media. Yep. Now, when we're recording this, it's just a week after the whole Miley Cyrus incident.
Yeah.
And, you know, I watch movies and everything like that, but I don't really care too much about the gossip websites or anything like that.
Right.
But
that's huge now.
Oh, that's huge.
Especially with social media.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, as soon as I got into work on Monday after it happened, that was the first thing I heard people talking about, was, oh my God, did you see that on television? And I'm like, what are you talking about?
And it feeds directly into the film Antiviral, which is all about the disease of celebrity being spread, and willingly.
Oh, more
people
than
consuming it, not just it's they're catching it. People are going out and seeking to be infected by celebrity.
I stopped by a local bar last night to say hi to a friend, and the DJ started playing the song that Miley Cyrus was dancing to in the actual club, and he calls it out and goes, hey, yeah, seems like a perfect week for this type of thing. So, I mean, it wasn't just feeding off of the celebrity the first time, but it's the repeated experience of coming back to it and building the shared experience of our culture off of this type of thing, which I think this movie, Antiviral, is making a strong criticism of.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's very important to note that with, you know, the disease that's being taken from Hannah Geist in this film, and the meat that's being generated with her cells, and everyone's consuming these things, the name Hannah Geist Geist, I actually looked up definition of Geist, and on Google, it actually says, actually, where is it? I wrote it on the other page.
It's
it is the spirit of an individual or group.
Yeah, it's the German word for ghost.
Yeah.
You know, and so this person, Hannah Geist, is nobody. Really, she's not.
She's the collective.
She's the collective.
Group, the actual spirit of the consumer.
Yeah.
In the world.
Yeah. And the thing is that we don't make celebrity. Or no, I'm sorry, celebrities don't make themselves. We make celebrities.
Yes.
You know.
Do you buy into it or do you not buy into it?
And there was an interesting quote in here, if I can find it in my notes. Yeah. There was an interview with the founder of the Lucas Clinic, Dorian mm-hmm. Lucas.
Yes.
And he has this fantastic quote here, where they were doing a news interview, and the interviewer asks him if he believes Hannah Geist deserves to be famous. And let's go ahead and listen to that quote here.
Does Aria Noble deserve to be famous?
Let me stop you right there. Deserve to be famous. What does it mean to deserve to be famous? Anyone who's famous deserves to be famous. And celebrity is not an accomplishment. Not at all. It's more like a collaboration that we choose to take part in. Celebrities are not people. They're group hallucinations.
The group hallucinations. I mean, it's very true. It's what we've been talking about. You know, celebrities don't create themselves. It's a group think ordeal. And if, you know, it's the whole supply and demand type thing of capitalism. If
mm-hmm.
if enough people want it, they're interested in it. If enough people buy into it, then it's worth a lot of money. If
yeah.
they don't, then it never happens.
Yeah. And the interesting thing I think about this movie is, like, when you look at Sid, he starts off as a supply and demand kind of guy. You know, I think his original motivation in the movie is getting the money that he
yeah.
gets from buying and selling the disease.
And from looks of his of the way his character is portrayed in the film, getting the perks of getting some of these diseases first, before anyone else can get them, just to infect himself, or at a little bit of, like, at cost price, maybe, or a discount.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, the idea that he's able to get the virus before anybody else can, he uses the machines to unlock the virus, and, you know, then he can pass it on to other people.
Right.
But what really struck me was, as the film was going on, he had a turning point moment in the film when he, after he's injected himself with the disease that will kill Hannah Geist. Mm-hmm. And spoilers, at the end.
Yeah, spoiler. Hannah Geist will die.
Hannah Geist dies at the end of the movie. He injects himself with that disease, and so he has this hallucination. Speaking of hallucinations, that's part of his the illness. It's like a fever dream almost,
right?
Where he becomes like a machine. Like his mouth morphs into like a radiator kind of,
yeah.
or an air conditioning vent that you
yeah,
see.
Yeah, it definitely looked like an air conditioning vent. And at that moment, I was just thinking David Cronenberg.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if he put it in there specifically as like an homage to his father, which it would totally work that way, but it just reminded me so much of like a David Cronenberg type thing. It's body horror to the nth degree, and that's what David Cronenberg
yeah,
does.
Yeah, he's like got, you know, he's got like these cables coming out of his back and holding him, suspending him up. And then you see this woman's hand, which is presumably Hannah's hand,
mm-hmm.
just reaching out to caress his face as black blood flows from the
yep.
from the grate in his mouth. So, you know, when he wakes up from that dream, I think that's a turning point in the movie.
Yeah.
Because he's now not doing it just for the money, but he's had an experience. One could almost say that it's a religious experience.
It's an awakening
yeah.
in a sense for... Yeah.
Yeah, and he's moved beyond the idea of being just a buyer and seller to being a true believer. Because before that, before that happens, he's criticizing the cannibalism.
Yes.
He actually says, I can't believe that this is supposed to happen. And then after it happens, you see him eating the steak.
Yeah.
You know?
That's it, and that's a really good point. But along with what he, when he was criticizing, he basically was talking about with the potential cannibalism, was talking about the dignity of people consuming these types of things.
Yeah.
In which his friend, who works at this butcher shop, his name's Arvid in the film, he has a quote that I wrote down. He said, I don't even think dignity is a valid currency anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
What does that say about that society?
Well, what does it say about our society?
Because exactly.
I think that's an argument that can definitely be made for where we're heading as a society.
Yeah, with the ridiculous consumption.
Well, not only that, but the Facebook, social media, and everything like that. We're doing a podcast, so I'm ironically bashing it.
But we're part of it. But
we're part of it. We're part of that system, and we're feeding off of it just as much as anybody else.
Yeah.
But I think part of it is, are you conscious about what you are feeding yourself in terms of media, and rather than, you know, just taking in whatever comes along and whatever is quote unquote popular
right.
at the time.
Well, and the thing is, with the way our technology's gone with social media and the way, you know, TV is now, we aren't getting doses of celebrities the way we used to. We're getting them in much larger quantities, and we're getting them for longer periods of time. And, you know, it's almost to a point where we can know, like, almost 24/7 what a celebrity's up to. You know, they're tweeting all the time or posting on Facebook and saying what they're doing. You know, we're not just seeing their performances anymore or whatever they're known for. We're getting a glimpse into their personal life. We're consuming the meat. We're getting their disease. Which I will also point out, I wanted to point out that it's interesting that the Lucas Clinic names the diseases for a lot of times the events or the places they're contracted. Like one had like honeymoon in it, like someone contracted a disease during their honeymoon, so it has like that name to it.
Yeah.
So that's kind of funny. So, I mean, there could be some funny circumstances.
Now, I wanted to talk to you about the name of the Lucas Clinic, because mm-hmm. I don't think naming it Lucas was unintentional.
Maybe.
It is my conviction that it was actually named after George Lucas.
I mean, maybe. I definitely think that the name was intentional, because if you watch this film and just think about, like, really think about it, it seems like everything's intentional.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing that's just whatever
yeah.
in the film.
Which is the sign of a very smart filmmaker, so kudos to Cronenberg for that, you know. But, my thought is that who is the person? He didn't create the summer blockbuster. I think you could, with Jaws, credit Spielberg for that.
Mm-hmm.
But Star Wars was the first quintessential summer blockbuster movie. It was the one that everybody had to see.
Right.
And so with that, he was the first one really to succeed a lot at pushing consumerism by saying, hey, you guys can have all the stuff having to do with the movie, the money for the movie, as long as I can have the money for the toys.
Right.
And he turned the toys, the books, the posters, everything else about Star Wars into a billion-dollar industry, while 20th Century Fox said, oh, that movie's not going to do anything.
So you believe that the Lucas Clinic is basically, you know, the allegory for the kind of the start of like extreme consumerism.
Absolutely.
Around celebrity hype, in a sense.
Yes.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. You made a very strong case to me right now, and I believe you. I'm a believer now. I got infected. I ate the meat.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Now, did you have the Jango Fett steak or the Obi-Wan Kenobi steak?
Oh, Jango Fett.
Jango Fett.
Probably, because it's cooler.
Yeah.
You know. One thing I want to talk about with this film real quick is the color of everything. Well, really lack thereof,
yeah.
pretty much.
Yeah.
Besides blood, everything is pretty much white.
Well, what really got me interested was when you go into the Lucas Clinic and even Sid's house and everything, it's all very sterile. You know,
mm-hmm.
the whiteness is very, almost upsetting and to a certain level, especially considering how we were talking about how pale of an actor he is.
Yes.
Sid just blends into the wall.
Yep.
You know, and the only thing that stands out about him is his hair.
And that's why I was kind of wondering, was he, did that help him in getting this role? I mean, obviously he's got great acting chops, which you can easily see in the film because he was phenomenal.
Yeah.
But did it help a little bit that his complexion is so pale that he would just blend right into what, you know, he's part of the sterile environment.
And also, I think, you know, how you were talking about the blood being the other major visual component to the way that the film is shot and everything. I think his hair helped do that because it was a permanent reminder of the blood on film all the time.
Yeah.
Every shot that he was in, there was a reminder through his physical makeup of how sterile the environment is supposed to be, how sterile the world is supposed to be without, you know, with when it's controlled by the thought of media. And then the blood that is the red being the transmission device within the film.
Yeah, I agree with that. Totally.
Something else that I thought was interesting about the film was it started off in that very clean, urban environment with lots of whites, lots of blacks, because all of the agents of the Lucas Clinic all wear black suits,
yeah,
white
very
shirts.
Very clean cut.
Yeah, yeah, they're men in black.
Yeah.
You know, and that was something that got to me too, was the idea of the men in black coming in. The classic alien story is that they take samples, they put stuff in.
Yeah.
These are the men in black of the media, of consumerism.
Yeah, interesting. Oh, and something, this harkens to something we were just talking about a little bit ago, with Sid, you know, getting closer to everything and why he started out probably just for the money at first and all that. But there's that extra aspect for him being the person who collects that he actually does get alone time with these celebrities.
Yeah.
So he actually gets close to them. He's the person extracting these diseases that he then goes and gives out to everyone.
And that was one of the really cool things about when he went to collect the final disease from Hannah Geist, was he got to get up close and personal with her, actually touch her. What was amazing to me about that scene was she didn't look sick at all in that particular scene of the movie, but she had this luscious red lipstick on.
Yep.
And she also had a blindfold on, and she just, you know, let him do whatever he wanted when to get the blood, and that was it. She didn't even acknowledge that he was there.
Right. It's like this is just part of what they do. This is their everyday job.
Yeah.
And it was very realistic in that sense that, you know, this is something that's been going on for some time now, so they're just kind of used to going through the motions. Definitely.
Another thing that I thought was interesting about that particular scene with him collecting the blood was the flowers. Because
Right. You
had the flowers in there that, you know, all well-wishers send to a media representative who is not feeling well. But earlier in the film, you have this dreamlike scene where Sid is walking through a room and there's a very strong horror soundtrack to that part in particular, and he's just running his hands over the flowers like
yep.
He knows something is going to happen.
Which, those are actually like planted flowers,
yeah.
Which I'll say at the moment, because this is something I've written down, that's the only time you see any sort of nature.
Yeah.
Which, that's not even actual nature, that's very human controlled,
yeah.
Because they're planted in a yard. It's interesting because there's just, this is totally based around the city,
mm-hmm.
You know, and it's not no descript city either. They don't say where it is. It's supposed to apply to any place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Any urban environment could have been that town.
Yes.
An interesting thing about the urban environment that was talking about how sterile and everything it was, as he's running away, as he's getting away from society and everything, he's descending deeper and deeper into the dirty parts of the town.
Yes.
Like the whole thing at the movie theater where he goes in, and the walls are just caked with crap.
Yeah.
And grime, and everything is just covering the entire place.
So to kind of catch us up to where that's taking place, Sid, for the listeners, Sid is doing his disease collecting on the side. So he's selling on the black market,
yeah.
In a sense. And he's going through his buddy Arvid to broker this kind of stuff, the guy who's working at the butcher shop selling the celebrity meat. And at one point, it's after he's infected with the very serious disease that ends up killing Hannah.
They're actually going to see another, I'm going to call them disease splicers.
Yes.
The disease actually shorted out his code writing machine.
Yes. So Sid at that point has asked if he can get a replacement part, and Arvid says, if you come and meet this other guy, I'm sure he's got a part and we can get it for you. So this guy's running, and his name is, I wrote it down, what was this guy's name? Levine. Yes. This other guy, Levine, he's running like an interactive theater, in a sense, where it has like videos of Hannah Geist talking to you.
Yeah.
And saying very sexual provocative things like, do you want to do this to me? What do you want me to do? You know, things like that.
And it was also very disturbing because she was pictured as being completely naked in a box.
Yeah.
You know, so it's very much an idea where you're taking the person or the thing that you worship and you put it into this small confined area and then you make it do what you want it to do.
Yeah, and that's exactly what that video is. And I will say, very interestingly, when he goes in there, there's a shot of lips very close up, and I immediately thought about Videodrome, the movie Videodrome, when Debbie Harry,
yeah,
her lips on the television,
yeah,
it was almost the same type thing, and I'm like, is this another homage to his dad? I don't know.
Maybe it is. You know, the thing is, smart movie makers make those kind of homages all the time, and
yeah,
unless you know what you're looking for, it could go by just like that. So, it was also really interesting, you know, that they jump him. They jump Sid, you know,
right,
because they want the virus so much. They don't care that he's actually sick at that point. Because he was legitimately on his last legs.
He was walking with a cane at this point,
yeah,
wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
And he had been spitting up some blood from time to time as well. It's obvious that this disease was actually really causing problems for him. Whereas you see much earlier in the film, he's had diseases and he just takes the right medication and then they're gone.
Right.
But this one stays with him and it's obvious that there's something very wrong with this.
Yeah.
So he basically gets jumped by Levine and Arvid because they want to take his blood because they want this disease because no one else has this version of the disease.
And, you know, the crazy thing about the disease was that they discover as they go on that it was a disease that Hannah Geist had contracted before and then sold. Then the Chinese got a hand on it and then they had weaponized it.
Yes.
Which is
to basically sabotage anyone else who was trying to copyright it.
Yeah, yeah. Which, I want to talk about the copyright, the discussion about copyright and digital rights management in a moment. But it's very interesting because you look at it and you take the drug. It reminds me very much of the time that I was in China and we could very easily walk into any bazaar or market or anything like that and you could buy illegally copied DVDs for next to nothing.
Right.
You know, so it was that interesting idea that, oh yeah, third world countries, second world countries, they want the same stuff that we want, but they don't have the kind of money to do it. So they're willing to break the copyright law to make it part of their own thing. Was it a targeted attack against Hannah Geist herself, or was it something that she picked up by accident? Is not really clearly laid out in the film, but it is an interesting thing to
right.
think about.
Yeah, yeah. So it's basically a situation, too, where, you know, Hannah's broken her contract.
Yeah.
Because she went and she gave this disease to one of these companies out in China first, so then they were able to go ahead and, like you said, weaponize it, but so it would create sabotage for anyone who's trying to trademark it. And that's why when Sid ran it through his machine at home, it broke the machine.
Yeah.
Because it was programmed, in a sense, to do that. So no one's able to get a hold of it, so he's just the one carrying it in his body, and obviously Hannah. But at this point, isn't it said that Hannah has died?
It is. The media has come out and said that Hannah has died. But the reality is that she's actually not... She's not quite dead.
She's just hanging out with Malcolm McDowell.
Yeah, she's hanging out with Malcolm McDowell in a really run-down mansion.
Which is a little bit in the woods.
Yes.
Which is interesting, because you start getting closer to nature when you go to the outskirts of what mainstream society is doing.
And that was one of my favorite parts of the movie, was actually at the mansion, because Hannah starts having conversations with Sid, and you realize that she's been thrust into this role of high priestess of media.
Yeah,
without her even really wanting it.
She really is, in the sense, kind of a religious leader at this point in the film.
Yeah. You know, and her death is, you know, is just as important as anything that could have happened in a religious calendar. It almost reminded me a lot of, like, hearing stories of Elvis passing away or when Princess Diana died. You know, because you talk to some people sometimes, and the British royal family will come up and they'll start telling you, oh, I remember exactly where I was when I heard that Diana died in that tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so just like Hannah Geist, you know, Diana has almost been canonized.
Right.
And made into a media saint in certain regards.
I would definitely agree with that. I think it's also important at this point to point out that that guy Levine that we were talking about, Levine and I guess Arvid was involved to some degree with him. Once they kind of catch back up with Sid March, they imprison him and are taping what he's going through as his body's deteriorating and he's spitting up more and more blood, which looks, I mean, cinematically looks amazing on the stark white, like when he's just like kind of throwing up blood basically, and it's just like this magnificent splash of color. So they're documenting this, and the interesting part is this is this guy Levine trying to find any opportunity he can to profit.
Yeah.
And the idea he has to do this is because he believes Hannah's already passed away at this point. Everyone believes she's already passed away, but Sid March knows she hasn't, but he doesn't share that with anyone. So what does he do? He's like, well, people want to know what happened to her. What was it like as she was going through this terrible disease and eventually died? I'll do the next best thing. I'm going to imprison this guy, videotape it, and then release it and be like, this is the same disease that killed Hannah Geist. Watch this guy die from it, and that's exactly what she went through. You can live it too.
That's the ultimate snuff film right there.
Yeah.
You know, if how does your media darling die?
That is following the celebrity all the way through to the bitter end, getting the complete overview of their life.
Yeah. And what was really fascinating about that fact was Sid just has enough strength to get out of the room.
Yeah, he fights his way out.
Yeah, and he fights his way to the competitor of the Lucas Clinic, and I can't remember their name off the top of my head.
Yeah, me neither.
The thing is, remember how I was talking about him starting off as being somebody only interested in the money, and then swinging more towards the true believer side.
Right.
At this point in the film, he's met Hannah. They've had this really in-depth personal conversations. You know, they've shared about themselves. They know each other as people now, not just as a professional working with a celebrity or as a person interested in a celebrity.
Well, and part of the reason for that is because he's going through the terrible disease that she's going through, and he's the only one that has it.
Yeah.
So it is a unique bond at this point that's created between them, because it's not been trademarked, it's not being sent out to the masses, it's just these two who have this terrible disease that they're dying from, and at that moment they're able to have a connection.
Yeah.
He had been working with her before, been in her presence before, but she wouldn't even speak to him.
Right.
Then she knows he's got it too, she's about to die, he's about to die, so she kind of opens up to him, and then that's when the actual bond is formed, which in the film is actually kind of legitimizing this Lucas Clinic company, what they're doing.
Yeah.
It's saying, there you go, there's the actual connection through the disease. That's what we've been doing all the time.
You know, the crazy thing is, though, that Sid is the only person who can say that he spoke to Hannah about the illness face to face. You know? So that gives him this special place in her death cult. You know?
Yeah.
Because he is able to take some technology that Arvid put together and continue on with the process of continuing the legacy of Hannah. Because what Arvid was doing was taking basically what he called a skin garden or a cell garden.
Yeah.
And he was growing them in like the shape of trees.
Yeah, which I mean, some of them kind of looked like crosses to me, though.
They did. They
which
did.
Was interesting. It's like these flesh-strewn crosses, which probably was intentional.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean,
to say there's literally celebrity DNA on this cross. This is the new religion for these people, in a sense.
We've talked a little bit about the religious overtones of the film in general before, but I think this is one place where you can really narrow down and say, yes, this film has a strong religious intent in it, because of, first of all, you have eating the body,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is a very strong Christian symbol with the communion rite.
And then you have drinking the blood, which happens later.
In the very last scene of the movie, the skin, the cell garden process has kept...
It comes to fruition.
Yeah, it comes to fruition. It's really hard to describe, and you really have to see the movie to really get what happens to Hannah at the end.
I can take a stab at it.
Go ahead.
To try and, as accurately as I can, basically Sid March, in order to save himself, to have his disease cured, brokers a deal, in a sense, with the company who weaponized the disease in the first place, and basically says, look, what we can do is we can... Hannah's died. I guess she died. She did die. She died for sure.
She's at least brain dead.
Yeah, she's at least brain dead at that point. The disease was in her before it was in Sid. So it's taken her to whatever degree. She's either kind of vegetable state or she's actually dead. We don't really know. But he says, okay, at this point, what about we take Arvid's technology and we take Hannah's body... And they put her in basically this thing that's like, it looks like a giant iron lung.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing, yeah.
And you get kind of a view inside of it, and it's a lot of viscera and just nasty, but her head is totally intact still. And she looks beautiful, just like in the rest of the film.
Yeah.
And she is, you know, so she's in this container, and then there's a handle that comes out of it. And it just looks like a half square handle.
Looks like a what you would hang a towel on.
Yeah, exactly, like a shower rack handle. But it is flesh.
Yeah.
It is her flesh that's been generated through the cell garden that Arvid created. So what they're able to do is basically continue to feed diseases through her.
Yeah, yeah.
And then harvest them through that bar
of
flesh.
Well, and it also gives... Like, if you want, you could say that you could roll this iron lung out as kind of an altar to Hannah Geist, and people can walk up to her, and they can touch it, and they can say that they touched the celebrity that they were in love with.
Very true.
But the crazy thing is, Sid takes it a step further.
He does.
That bad boy breaks out a knife, razor, I think it was a razor.
I think it may have been a scalpel.
Yeah. And he...
He first locks the door.
He locks the door.
So he's alone.
So... This is probably the creepiest thing in the entire movie. Probably the most sexual thing in the entire movie, too.
Yeah, because there was no sex.
There was no... Amazingly enough, you saw on the video, at one point, you did see Hannah Geist nude,
mm-hmm.
but you never saw anything overtly sexual about the entire experience. So he... closes the door, takes the scalpel, and cuts an artery. And the movie ends with him basically drinking her blood.
Drinking straight from it. Not only just like sticking his head under and letting it drip in his mouth, he has his lips suctioned around this skin bar, basically sucking the blood out. And there's your drinking the blood.
Yes.
Showing he is, at that point, the truest of believers, honestly. He is... the number one Hannah Geist fan and follower.
Yeah. Yeah, which is interesting because he starts off the movie not even really wanting to talk to her. And at the end of the movie, he is the only person who has had this an intimate shared relationship. And that, to me, it didn't seem like he was drinking her blood, even though he was. It seemed to me like it was the only way that he could kiss her.
Yeah.
You know, and it was the most, it was the closest he could come to having an actual physical romantic relationship with a woman that he now loved.
Well, I mean, he could have opened the iron lung thing and actually kissed her lips, but who knows what all was
involved. Who knows what
with
kind
that.
Of virus he would have picked up from that.
Yeah.
Really quickly, because we're almost out of time, but I wanted to talk about the digital rights management issue behind the viruses itself.
Yes.
They had this process where instead of just writing a code on a box and then presenting to someone, they would create a portrait of the disease.
Yeah.
Which was some of the most, that was to me one of the most amazing science fiction parts of the entire
yeah,
film.
Yeah, instead of like written word trademarking, it was actually visual trademark.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a fingerprint
mm-hmm.
for the disease itself.
Yeah. And it's interesting, you know, that Sid basically was doing what a lot of people do with their music and everything is they take it, they break the DRM, and then they pass it out to all of their friends.
Yeah, pirating.
I mean, yeah.
Disease pirate.
Disease pirating.
Sid March, disease pirate.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure that he could have gone to Sweden and been a big hit.
Yeah.
You know.
And the one last thing that I wanted to point out was with Hannah Geist dead in the end, but they're still using her, it's interesting because even after death, they're running products through Celebrity. And I think we have even seen that in our society. You know, if you think of, man, there have been times when they'll still refer to or harken back to celebrities that are already have already passed
mm-hmm.
For commercial purposes.
Yeah. It's like that what was it? I think it was Natalie Cole who actually did a duet with her father, Nat King Cole.
Right.
Even though he had been dead for
yep.
20 odd years at that point.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and then you also think that, you know, there are celebrities who are dead like Elvis Presley, and people are still making money off of Elvis, even though he's dead. He's not around anymore. He's not a brand. He's not a product anymore. But even through death, these are all being run through him, just as these diseases that are being sold are being run through the dead body of Hannah Geist.
How often can you turn on the television, flip through the channels, and find a rerun of I Love Lucy?
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
That's the exact same type of thing.
I agree.
You know? And, lo, I will be with you even until the end of the age. You know, to quote the Great Commission, you know, that is exactly what is being brought. And not only that, but with television and broadcast technology, not only are these things being seen on a regular basis by us, but they're going out into outer space.
Mm-hmm.
They're traveling the galaxy. So the message of Lucille Ball is spreading wherever it might be. Anything that's been transmitted is going out.
True.
And that is probably one of the most amazing thoughts about pop culture and media and everything like that in general. So if you're listening to this in the year 5000, hello.
Well, I think we've covered everything about this.
I think we've pretty much covered everything. What was, like, one scene in your mind that really made you just kind of go, ew?
Oh, needles in an arm. Because, I mean, I don't like needles in the first place, but anytime you show me a needle going into skin close up in a film, I have to almost look away. It makes me a little squeamish.
Medicine operations, medical stuff like that, to me, is something that is very difficult to watch. I can watch violence on television all the time, but surgery freaks me out.
Well, because the violence on television is fake.
Yeah, it's very fake. But they make the surgeries look real.
Oh, yeah.
Go figure. And something that I always liked about the movie was how all of the shots seemed to have the camera locked down, except for specific scenes where they're following Sid
mm-hmm.
throughout the movie. So, like, when I was talking about when he was running his hands through the flowers, and
mm-hmm.
a lot of scenes when he was walking through the actual Lucas Clinic, they have these shaky cam shots of them following him. So you get more of an actual interaction with him. One of the squickiest moments for me in the movie was when Sid took a foot-long Q-tip.
Oh, God. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. That did make me a little uncomfortable.
And I don't know if it was special effects or if it was real, but let's just say he purged his sinus cavity.
Yeah, he takes this really long Q-tip and shoves it way up his nostril. It had to hit his brain to swab for a disease.
It was amazing.
Ugh.
And, you know, props if he did that in real life, because Cronenberg did not pay him enough money.
Right. Well, I've heard that Caleb Landry Jones is actually a very method actor.
Oh.
So he may have insisted on doing it.
He might have said, this is going up my nose.
Yeah. You never know.
You never know.
And with that...
And with that, I think it's time to give a rating for this movie.
I believe it is. My two cents on this, I'll take the lead since this was my pick. Antiviral, outstanding film. Very well done. David Cronenberg's first offering. I can't wait to see what else he has in store for us. I hope it's in the same vein, like horror, sci-fi, thriller. That mixture together, perfect. Any of those components on their own, sure, I'll check that out too. Awesome.
Yeah, I don't think we'll be seeing any comedies from him anytime soon, though.
Yeah. All the acting was very well done, especially Caleb Landry Jones.
Yeah.
I mean, he knocked it out of the park. He was very convincing in his role. The visuals were outstanding. Everything looked so sterile. The cinematography was great.
And the special effects, like the CGI that was in the film,
yeah,
was not overstated. You saw some moving stuff in the background,
yep,
especially at the Lucas Clinic, but it all fit within and nothing was that glaringly, yep, out of place.
And the soundtrack fit perfectly,
oh,
I
great,
think.
Great,
I can't find any real flaws with the film, and therefore, I don't think it's the most perfect film ever done, the best film in the world, but I would give it 4 out of 5 stars, and highly recommend it to anyone.
Oh, absolutely. I think this was perfect movie for us to start off with, because I had the same reactions as you. I love the cinematography. I love the use of color in this film.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably one of the best parts of the entire film to me. I love the message and the meanings behind the shots, and I love how they used a wide variety and a wide catalog of shots within the film. So because of all of these things, the excellent soundtrack, wonderfully put together story, fantastic acting on the part of a group that I had seen only bits and pieces from, but never anything in particular. I'm definitely going to be keeping an eye out for all of these actors again,
mm-hmm,
especially Jones, you know, to see what he does in the future. I'm going to have to give this 4 out of 5 stars as well.
All right.
So overall, the podcast gives this 4 out of 5, which I would say makes this movie a must watch.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Definite must watch.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us for the very first episode of Carlin and Jordan's Most Excellent Movie Night.
Hope everyone enjoyed themselves as much as we did.
Yep. And keep on watching movies.
You've been listening to Carlin and Jordan's Most Excellent Movie Night.
Our theme music was provided by Sweet Wave Audio. To find more royalty-free music for your own projects, check out sweetwaveaudio.co.uk.
And special thanks to Ariana Ramos for her graphic design savvy helping us with our album art.
Visit our website at mostexcellentmovienight.com to listen to other episodes, give us your opinion, and share with us other movies you'd like to have reviewed.
You can also contact us through our email address, mostexcellentmovienight@gmail.com. We would love to read them on the air.
Also, if you could rate and review the podcast on iTunes, we would be your friends for life.
For sure. That's all for now. Thanks for listening to Carlin and Jordan's Most Excellent Movie Night,
where movies are most excellent.
This has been a Nerd Circle podcast production.